he was the type of sibling, I guess, where I could go, you know, a couple, a week or so without talking to him. And then he would just show up at my house and he'd be like, I just wanted to come check on you. And so all the time, I just feel like, you know, maybe I'm just going to come home one day and then he'll just be here to check on me.
You're listening to River City Mystery Podcast, the show that delves into the Evansville and surrounding tri-state area's mysteries, including unsolved crimes, murders, and disappearances. A show that isn't afraid to jump down the rabbit hole to investigate reports of local hauntings, sightings of UFOs and cryptids, among other paranormal phenomena. With your host, co-founder of the Humans of Evansville Facebook page, law office worker by day, insomniac researcher of the unknown by night, Matt Daig.
He lost his job in January, and then I think he just didn't have purpose. That's what he did. He got up, he went to work, he worked all day, he went, rode his moped back to wherever he was going, and it was usually Chris's garage, or he would come here. He might go to his sister's. I mean, I'd wake up, and he was asleep on the floor next to me. Zachary stopped taking his meds, or he wasn't getting them regular one, because I was starting to notice. If you know somebody that's schizophrenic and they're on medication, you know if they're not on medication or something's not right with them. He's a grown man. You know, it's really hard to take mama telling you what to do at that age. You know what I mean? So it was just, I was watching. I talked to him one day, and he said, well, I just don't have any reason to have a schedule right now. I said, yeah, you do. You can come out here and you can do work out here. Me and Grandma need that. And then him and Eric got a job for about a week or two in Mount Vernon. They were riding their mopeds down there and helping this lady whose apartment had caught fire. And they were getting it, cleaning it up after the for the insurance company. They made him a couple hundred dollars a piece. You know, Memorial weekend, it was like Thursday night. He was headed home from here, and it was after dark. And they pulled him over, and his plates had expired. Not like we had any big Memorial Day plans or anything. I'd come get him if he wanted to come out, whatever. He would text me, hey, you need to watch this show on this channel, or have you seen this one? You know, and then I would do the same to him. So it was kind of like that kind of chit-chat a lot of time. You know, for most of the weekend, he's not a big talker anyways. Then he said something that he could pay for it online. Yes, I was questioning him how much it was going to cost, blah, 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 you know. So then he said he could do it online. So my mom was going to be in town that day. I don't know what she was doing. And she took $80 by to him. And that was like late Sunday afternoon. He told her, he said, Grandma, I'll see you Tuesday or Wednesday. He'd work it off. You know, he didn't want any money from us, you know. And she said, well, I need you to do something upstairs because he's the only one that can get upstairs. I have trouble getting upstairs and that kind of thing. So something she wanted him to do. And he says, then Grandma, that's what we'll do. I can't believe he didn't call her and say, I can't come, or, yeah, you know, I just, yeah. He told Rachel that he was going to check in on Cecilia because Rachel was going on a retreat in Kentucky, and he didn't do it.
That was a clip from my conversation with Gina, the mother of 38-year-old Zachary Carey, who's been missing since May 30th, 2023. Zachary was last seen when his best friend Chris dropped him off at the Linville, Indiana welcome sign, and his family's not heard from him since then. His mom went on to tell me that it wasn't unusual for Zachary to go off into the woods and disappear for several days and to make his way back home or wherever he was living at that time. He loved being out in nature, but it is highly unusual for him to disappear for this long, for this number of months by this point. So the family is very concerned about Zachary's well-being and want to make the public aware that Zachary may be out there and for people to keep an eye out. I also had the opportunity to speak with Cecilia, who is Zach's sister, and Cecilia filled me in a little more on Zachary's background and some of the circumstances surrounding his disappearance.
Well, my brother, he's my older brother. He's 15 years older than me. And I know when I was a baby, he had gone to prison. And he was there, I want to say, like, 8 years. I don't know for sure, but my mom probably would. And when he got out, he, you know, moved back home with me and my mom, you know, got his life back together. And he's always been the type of person who's very quiet. He's not a very big people person. Mm-hmm. He just likes to keep to himself. But he is nice, you know, he's not mean. He looks mean, but he's not. And he went back to college and he became a welder. He went to Nashville, like something tech in Nashville, and he became a welder. So he did get his life back on track. And then he was doing really good. He was staying with his friend, Chris, and he had like a nice job as a welder. And, you know, he was just doing really good for himself. And then I guess at some point, I don't know if, because he also has schizophrenia. Like, he also has, like, mental issues, I guess. I'm not sure how to word that. And I don't know if at some point he quit taking his medicine or what happened. But we do know that he kind of had a little bit of, like, a mental break. And I think it stemmed from losing his job. He ended up losing his job as a welder. He is still a welder. He just lost the job that he was at. And then it kind of spiraled from there. Like, about a month after he lost his job, our niece overdosed and she passed away. She was 19.
Oh, no.
And I know that kind of affected him, too. And I think it was just the timing was bad. He was already kind of in, like, a hole. And so shortly after our niece passed away, he came to my house and spoke to my older sister. She was living with me at the time. And him and her are closer in age, and they've always been, you know, really close. And he told her that he, you know, was feeling kind of suicidal. He kind of felt like he didn't have much to live for. He was, you know, a grown man. He was not married. He doesn't have kids. And he was just kind of not in a good place mentally.
Right.
And I do know that my sister talked to him, and you know, at the end of the conversation, he felt much better, and he was like, okay, I'm going to go. He did say something along the lines of, like, because he's always, since he is so much older than me, he's always seen himself as kind of like a father figure to me, more of like my older brother. He's always kind of been that role. And so he was like, you know, Cece's grown up now, you know, she doesn't need me to take care of her anymore. And he was just, you know, talking like that. And then that was the last time that we saw him. After that, he was like, I'm just going to go home. And I do know my brother, we're Native American. And so we're, you know, it's in our tribe and our culture, you know, we're taught to be so close to the earth. And when he is stressed out or, you know, feeling certain, you know, that way mentally, one of the things he does is he does love to go in and immerse himself in nature. Like, he loves to go camping and he loves to just walk around in the woods and, you know, fishing and stuff. Like, he's very outdoorsy. And it is normal for him if he's feeling, you know, some type of way, or even if he's happy, he just loves to be outside. And so he is kind of like, what's it called?
Like a survivalist?
Yeah, survivalist. Yeah. Cause he really likes that he can go outside and, like, be in the woods for like a week with like nothing. He loves living off the land.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also normal for him to go and do that for like long periods. So when we didn't hear from him for a week after knowing he was upset, we all kind of just assumed that that's what he was doing. But it was weird to us because he never told us. And especially being gone for so long, if he doesn't tell us where he's at, he tells us how long he's going to be away, or he'll tell us where he's coming back, or he'll check in, you know. So like a week went by, and, you know, my sister was like, I'm starting to get worried because last time I talked, he was upset. And now he hasn't answered any of us in a week. He didn't tell us where he was going. And then we all made the decision that we should call the police because, you know, Like it just didn't seem like him to not tell us what was going on. And then that's when we found out that his friend had actually, I guess after leaving my house and talking to my sister, he had gone home and spoke to his friend. And from what I've gathered, because I know I told you that his friend wasn't very cooperative, so we don't have his friend's full side of the story. But from what we've gathered, he told his friend the same thing, that he was feeling suicidal and that he kind of wanted to go to the woods to be by himself, but potentially because that's where he wanted to end his life at. And personally, I feel like if you're someone's friend and they tell you that, you shouldn't take them to the woods to do what they want to do. But from what I gathered, that's what the friend did. He said, if this is what you want, I'll take you to the woods. My brother supposedly, with his friend, left his friend his wallet, his cell phone, just his personal belongings. He supposedly left it with his friend. But I know once we called the police and once the police talked to the friend and they found out that the friend had dropped him off in Linville, they had done searching and they had found my brother's cell phone by the Welcome to Linville sign, like off the highway in Linville. And I don't know if it, because at this point it was out there for days, so I don't know if it worked or if they found anything. We don't know about that.
Okay. And how many days after he was dropped off at the sign was the phone found?
I want to say he was missing. He was gone for I think it was 4 or 5 days before we were like, this doesn't feel right. And then I want to say it was the day after they found the phone. So maybe 6 days after he had been dropped off. Right. Because apparently.
Okay.
Oh, sorry.
No, I was just wondering if there was any tracking devices on the phone or anything that anyone was able to find out if where was that phone for that period of time was it dropped off there the day before or, you know, that kind of thing.
No, they think that it was dropped off when he was dropped off in Linville. Okay. We're thinking he was dropped off around that sign and either he just dropped his phone or he just purposely placed his phone there because it was just sitting by the sign. It was kind of just sitting someone had just put it there.
Okay. So not like somebody flung it out of a window or something like that. It was placed there.
Yeah, it was placed there. Yeah.
Okay.
So we're thinking that he was dropped off at Linville. He went into the woods. And then he probably just sat his phone right there before going into the woods.
Okay.
And then, so it was probably out there for probably 5 or 6 days before anyone got to it. And I don't know if it worked or not, or if the police were able to find tracking on it. I could ask my mom if she knows that, but I haven't been asked that.
Right. Okay. And it's not unusual for him just to kind of go off and be in the woods by himself and be a survival. But after a period of days and weeks, it comes okay, how can someone support themselves for that long? And, why would they not reach back out to you guys?
Yeah. And he always he was always very good. He would tell us where he's going and how long he planned to be gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he'd be I'm going, to the state park for a week, I'll be back, this day.
Right.
And we might not hear from him during that week, but he told us when he should be back. Or he would go ahead and go, but then call us and be like, oh, hey, I'm here. This is how long I might stay. If I stay longer, I'll give you guys a call. So it was always something along those lines. And this time it was very worrisome because he didn't tell us. And also the last time anyone had talked to him, he was feeling suicidal. And so to not know where he went and then to later find out his plans, it was just very scary.
So have you guys had many conversations with his friend who dropped him off at the sign about this?
So his friend, that's a whole nother can of worms. Because his friend, it was their childhood, they've been friends since they were kids. And so Chris is actually a close family friend. So when we found out that Chris was kind of involved and was kind of the person who dropped him off, it was kind of like a stab in the back sort of way, because I kind of saw him as my brother too, I've known him my whole life type of deal.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's your best friend, why would you enable him to commit suicide or to do something like that? And then when the police got involved, I know before, like in the very, very beginning, my mom had tried to call Chris and like ask, like, hey, have you heard from Zach? Mm-hmm. And he would tell her, like, no, I haven't seen him in a couple of days. You know, I kind of just think he's probably out in the woods or something. And then when the police got involved, he became very uncooperative. And the police even stated that, like, they're having a very hard time getting any information out of him. And then at some point when the search and rescue happened, they needed, like, Zach's clothes for, like, the scent dogs. And I know that my sisters and I had gone to Chris's house to ask, because he lived with Chris. So we had to, you know, ask him if we could, you know, get some of his clothes. And he told us no. He was like, I'm not letting you in. You cannot have any of his belongings. And the cops had actually gotten called because he was just outside of us, you know, feeling how we feel, betrayed and angry. And, you know, if this is your friend, why aren't you helping find him in any way you can?
Right.
He did also call the police because technically, since Zach lived with him and his things were left in Chris's care, Chris did not have to give us anything for the scent dogs. And he actually didn't. He did not give the police any of Zach's clothes for the search and rescue. So the only thing that they could use was Zachary's wallet that they had confiscated from Chris. And at that point, once the police got it, it had been in Chris's care for like a week. And who knows who touched it? So the police were even like, we don't think this is going to have a strong enough scent for the dogs. So yeah, so as far as Chris goes, he's pretty uncooperative. I do know that they had got warrants for him and his wife's phone because they, we don't know what the texts say because the police, you know, can't tell us some of those things.
Sure, yeah.
But the police did tell my mom that they did find some pretty suspicious text messages on Chris's phone. They did not tell her what they said or who they were to or who they were from, but they did say that. And they said it was enough that they got another warrant to search his wife's phone.
Okay. Your brother, was Zach renting from, because you said they were living together. Was he like living there? Was there some sort of agreement to rent or something?
I think so. I think Zachary was paying rent because it was like Chris and his family lived in the house and then they had like a garage in the back that Zach had turned into like his home. So kind of like a little studio situation going on back there. And so I think he was paying rent to Chris.
Did Zach have any pets?
Yes, he did. He had a dog. His dog's name was Cutter. And okay. he was a pit bull mix, I think. He was like your average like mixed breed dog. I know after he went missing, that was our big concern. We were like, who's taking care of Zach's dog? And Chris, my mom had reached out to Chris and was like, hey, you know, we can take him. We, you know, Cece, Rachel, me, like someone can take care of the dog until we find him, until he comes home. And Chris would not give us the dog. And he actually gave the dog to the Humane Society and we tried to get him out, but when the dog went into the Humane Society, you know, he was scared. He didn't know what was going on. And he, I guess he ended up biting one of the like handlers there. Oh. And so they put him on the list to be put down. I know we tried to adopt him, but then when we tried, they told us that there was a very good chance they weren't even going to let him be adopted because he had bitten someone.
And what I'm kind of thinking is that if he was wanting to go kind of just go live his own survivalist lifestyle in the woods, if he had planned that out, would he have taken Cutter with him, or would he have left the dog behind for someone else to take care of so he could go live alone? Like would that be something he would do?
Yeah, I know, especially in the summertime, the dog would go with him. I know this happened around the summertime. And I think it also depends on how long he planned to be gone, you know, because I think if he planned to be gone for a while, he probably wouldn't have taken the dog. But I know that there were times where he would take Cutter with him.
And have there
that's a good point. I have not thought about that.
Yeah, I mean, if they were really close, you know, and you know you're going to take a long trip somewhere, you might bring your dog. But then, like you said, if it's too long, then you have to take care of two. I don't know. I was just thinking, plan something out and you were close to your pet. It seems like you'd have some kind of game plan for that.
Yeah, for the pet. Yeah, and he really did love his dog. Also, his companion. And so that was another thing for us, was we were like, he wouldn't just leave Cutter behind.
Right.
And he especially wouldn't have wanted Chris to give him to the Humane Society.
Right. And have there been, like, sightings of Zach anywhere since anyone's heard from him?
Yes and no. We've had a lot of people, like, random people will just text us and say, like, hey, I think I saw your brother. I think he's here. And we always look into it, and it's either never him or it's just, it just is not a good lead, I guess. Because a lot of random people do text us and say, you know, oh, I think I saw him at Walmart, or I think I saw him here. But it's never true. Or it's, you know, someone who could just look like him, or it's just random people texting us. There was one, I guess, kind of recently, one of Zachary's old coworkers from his welding job was driving by the marina, and they said that he thought he saw Zachary walking, like, from the marina. And so he called my older sister, and my older sister said, well, since it was his coworker, we were like, well, he obviously knows Zach, so he would recognize Zach on the street. So my sister said, you need to call the Warwick County police, and if you think you saw him, you need to tell them that. And I'm assuming he did call them, because I know that they had talked to my mom about going to the marina and reviewing cameras, but we never really heard back from them. They said that they were treating it as a real sighting, but in the camera footage, I guess you couldn't see his face. That's about the only sighting, maybe. It's kind of a maybe, because it's like the coworker says it's him. The police said that they're treating it as a real sighting, but also they couldn't verify that it was him. A couple weeks ago, actually, someone again had called my mom or my sister and said, hey, I think I see Zach. I think he is in Kentucky. And so we all drove to Kentucky, because they gave us like an exact place. They were like, he's living at kind of like one of those tent cities for like the homeless.
Right.
They were like, he's staying in a tent behind this hotel, and it's by the smoke shop, and he frequents the smoke shop. So we all drove down there. We went to this place where people, you know, were camping in their tents. We didn't see him. We asked around. Most people said that they did not see him. We were showing his pictures. There was one man, the guy who's the cashier at the smoke shop. He said that the man in the picture looks familiar, that he feels like he has seen that man before. But he didn't give us a specific, yes, I see this man, he comes in every day.
Right.
Or, you know. So that was as far as we got there. And again, it was kind of just one of those empty leads. Like, we don't know if it's true. But again, that was very specific. And at this point, so many people text us and say, oh, we think we saw him. You know, it's like, we can't call the police every single time, because then the police are just going to think we're crazy, because we're calling them so much with all these people who say they see him. And so that's kind of why we chose to go and check it out ourselves before, because that's also in Kentucky. We'd have to get the Kentucky police involved.
You don't know what rabbit holes to jump down, because it's like, is this a missing person? Is he wanting to not be found? And he's like actively trying to avoid being caught, which makes it even more difficult. Or did he choose to end things himself? Or is there something like, did he have any enemies? Like, would somebody have, you know, that he got into it with somebody? But I mean, everything is on the table, I guess.
It is. And I know when he first went missing, the police kind of told us, like, you know, like, he's a grown man. He has a past. He was an addict in his past.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were like, you know, there's a very good chance maybe he's just using again, and maybe he's just strung out somewhere.
Right.
And a lot of the people who say that they see him, it kind of follows that, in the sense that he might just be strung out in a homeless camp. I really hope that's not it, but also that sounds better than my brother killing himself in the woods. And then the only reason that we were worried that he may have committed suicide is because of the way that he was talking, mm-hmm. and because of the fact that he did not tell us he was going anywhere. And then his friend ended up being a very sketchy character in his disappearance.
Yeah.
I personally think that Chris knows a lot more than what he's telling us. And so I don't know. I pray every night that he is alive. And again, I don't wish that he's strung out in a homeless camp, but that's better than the alternative.
If he were to have taken off somewhere to be, do you guys have an idea where he may go to, like, where would be his place that he would escape to and kind of blend in with society? Would you just kind of, is he comfortable with that society of, like, the homeless camps and homeless shelters, like where you could literally live off the grid, because I mean, he has no phone, he doesn't have money, wallet. So he's literally, you said he's a survivalist, or could live out in the woods by himself. So would he just, is there like a woods or something that he would gravitate to that he would feel most comfortable in?
Yes. And it was the Linville Woods.
Where
he was dropped off. Yeah. When my brother was a kid, I think they were our cousins. I don't know this was before I was born,
mm-hmm.
but when he was a kid, he lived in Linville with our cousins, okay. And he kind of grew up there. So he grew up very familiar with those woods, with that area.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one of the main places when, if he wanted to go, you know, go camp, go on a hike, whatever, it was usually like around the Linville State Park area or just mm-hmm. the woods around the Elberfeld Linville area.
Right. There's quite a few in that area. I mean, if somebody were going to go try to disappear, I guess it's possible you could just, you know,
yeah,
you could do
I
that.
I know when the search team, when the Warrick County Police, they did a search. And there were divers in the lake at the state park.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was like firefighters and the police and like a special like rescue team. And it took them, I want to say more. It was like a couple of days for them to like completely comb through all those woods. Because it's such dense, thick woods. And there's so much of it.
Well, I know they were looking for another missing person, Andy Wagner. I did a episode on her, but they were looking up in some stripper pits in that area. I think Peabody Cole had given them permission to do some searching. So... you know, I guess they would have also found something. I think they're looking, you know, it's hard to find a person in that kind of thing, but there were people out there looking for her. So
mm-hmm.
inadvertently they'd be looking for him too.
Yeah. I remember when we had gone up there for the search party, and then, cause we thought, you know, at the search party, we thought we were also going to be out in the woods helping look for him, but the police were like, no, because it's, you know, he's been gone for so long that at that point they told us that they were more than likely searching for a body and not a person. And they said that is not something they would want us to be in the woods looking for.
Mm.
And also just because it is such a thick forest, we could easily get lost and turned around because we are not familiar with that the way my brother is. So they were really nice. They gave us a shelter to stay in. And they bought us water, and people from the community brought us food. Like the whole community was really nice to us.
Well, that's nice.
And we were walking around the state park. We were like passing out flyers and hanging them up. And we actually met someone who was friends with Andy's mom.
Oh yeah.
And she prayed with us. She was like, oh. I know what it feels like, and you know, I really hope that you guys can find him. So yeah, that is crazy that you said that. But yeah, we did meet her. I think it was like her aunt or someone.
Yeah, her aunt has been, and her mother actually passed away a couple of months ago. She, is what happened. So I think just the stress of not being able to find Andy, just, I think it was too much for her. So, I mean, it's just, it's rough on the whole family, and, you know, what you guys are going through is just, it's a lot of, just the not knowing. It's one thing to know that something happened, but it's another thing to like, okay, is he in an encampment? Is he hurt somewhere? Is he... just wanting to not be found. It's got to drive you guys crazy.
And it does. And there's so many people who will tell me like, oh, I think he's just strung out, or oh, you know, he probably is dead. And I'm like, I don't want to think about it. But unfortunately, it's like, you can't not think about it. It almost doesn't feel real, because there are so many times when I just think, I'm like, oh, like, because also Zach, he was around. He wasn't, you know, not around or in the family, but he was the type of sibling, I guess, where I could go, you know, a week or so without talking to him. And then he would just show up at my house and he'd be like, I just wanted to come check on you. And so all the time I just feel like, you know, maybe I'm just going to come home one day and then he'll just be here to check on me. I think about that a lot.
Hopefully you guys are able to find him and he's, you know, this has a happy ending.
That's what I hope
to. And I actually reached out to his friend, Chris, but I haven't heard back from him. So I guess that's not surprising. He probably doesn't sound like he would want to talk, but I thought I'd give him the opportunity, you know.
Yes. And if he does talk to you, we would all love to hear what he has to say.
Yeah.
I think even the police.
but you never know. Maybe he's like, hey, I just want to clear the air and this is what happened. And so is there anything else you'd like to that? You want to share or that you think people need to know?
I think I know when we were first posting, you know, like on social media about his disappearance, the police had asked us to put in our posts, like when we made like the missing person thing, to put on it that he, I mean, it's been so all these months, and to our knowledge, he has not had his medicine, which means that he mentally could be in a very different state right now. And it's not that my brother is not a threat, like he is not a mean person, but we don't know what type of state he is in mentally. And so the police stress to us that, you know, if someone thinks that they see him, like, don't approach him because we don't know how he's going to react, and to just call the police first. And that's, I guess that would be the only thing that I want to mention, because a lot of people kind of read that and they kind of took it as, oh, like he's dangerous and he's not mentally there enough to, you know, refrain himself from becoming aggressive or whatever. And I would like to think that that's not my brother, that he wouldn't react that way. But I also don't know where he is mentally. And I know that it has been so long without his medicine. And that would be the one thing. I just want to stress to people that he is a good person, but definitely probably don't approach him if you think you see him. And please call the Warwick County Sheriff's Department, like, if you have any information or if you think you might have saw him, like anything.
And the number to contact the Warwick County Sheriff's Department is 812-897-6180. And you can find that number down in the show notes at rivercitymystery.com/15. I'll also have photos of Zachary that you can reference to see, you know, who you're looking for. Keep in mind, it has been a number of months, though, so his appearance may have changed. He may have lost weight. He may have more facial hair. So keep that in mind. I want to thank Gina and Cecilia for sharing their stories today. Hopefully it brings the family one step closer to bringing Zachary home. Thank you for listening. Until next time, take care.